Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the Van Wee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock on the First Coast. The eclipse has not started yet. You can stay in and listen to the program for the next hour. And this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we come here today with a heavy heart, knowing that in a few cities around Florida last evening, including our own, there have been some more police shootings. And it's just inexplicable, completely. It should be unlikely. Unfortunately, I think we're all getting a little too, what's the right word?
Numb.
Yeah, that is the right word. We're a little bit numbed to this stuff. It's just got to stop, people. So our hearts go out to the families.
And absolutely.
We hope everybody is good. One of them down in Kissimmee, I believe, didn't make it. Hope the rest will recover. All right, anyway, the purpose of our program has not changed. We are here to give you some updated information. We're here to answer your questions. Lines are open, 904-222-TALK. As always, callers go directly to the front, and for today only, unless we really like it this way, all callers will be free.
Nice. What a deal.
If we like it, we'll do it again next week that way. We will have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 636-7888. It will be market-oriented, and we have a lot to say about the market today, and, well, actually a lot of other things, too. So get your questions together and give us a call. All the regulars, thanks for tuning in. If you're new out there, try to stick around for the hour, and hopefully we'll all learn something from each other, which is made a lot easier by the fact that we are here live, unlike so many shows. So if you want to talk about something you want to talk about, just pick up the phone and give us a call. There are far too many people who do not bother to do their shows live. They will not take your questions. If you're afraid of calling in, don't be. We don't bite. But if you're really afraid of calling in, only 4% or 5% of the population who listens to talk radio will ever call the station. But if you don't want to do that, you can always email us, and Adam will give you all the details of how to get through to us by phone, fax, or email, or any of that stuff. And we'll remind you a little bit about who we do and who we are and what we do Monday through Friday and nights and weekends and mornings. But that's another story. Anyway, today, a couple of topics that I'm interested in. You have heard pretty much ad nauseum, I'm sure, that the only way that you really should do an IRA nowadays is to buy physical gold and put it in your hand, so at home. So I did a little research on that, and I'm gonna tell you what I know, what I'm not sure of, and what you're hearing, and where they fail to overlap a little bit. Because to me, it's still a very, well, it goes against what I was taught, and it's a very scary proposition how these people are leading, shall we say, the people who want to be believers. They're maybe gullible, maybe not, but they sure make it sound good, and it may not be exactly what it seems. So we'll talk about that and a few other topics. And as I said, if you want to change the topic and talk about what you want to do, call us. We'll put you right to the head of the line at 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. All right, this week in the market, I like to come up with a single word or a very short phrase to describe it, and this one was like falling off a log. Volatility.
Yeah, we haven't seen that in a while, at least not to this extreme. But at the end of the day, it was less than 1%. That's the market dropped less than 1% this week. I had to go back
but
and check
that. But it
didn't
do that in a straight line, did
no.
it?
No. And I really almost forgot, but Monday was a really good day. It was up over 1% on the S&P. So, but
how quickly that was forgotten.
Yeah, Thursday really erased that from my mind because Thursday was so ugly.
And from your account.
Yeah, well, that too. Thursday started off as a down day, but not terrible, down about 100 points, which is about a half a percent these days. And then the news of the terror attacks came, and man, the market just sank. I think it was down 280 points. So
sometimes terrorist attacks bother the market. Sometimes they don't. It does make a difference when it's within your borders.
Yeah, absolutely. So that then Friday was also down. So the net was not that bad, though. The Dow was down 0.8. The NASDAQ and the S&P were both down 0.6. So really, a lot of volatility for very little movement at the end of the day, end of the week. This time of the year is also historically the most volatile time for stocks, so don't be surprised if this continues into September. I would not be surprised at all if we have had such a involatile year that it just wouldn't surprise me if this was the start of a period of volatility.
Normal.
Yeah, exactly. It is more normal. So
what we have seen prior to this past week in terms of volatility is it's approximately historically low to almost non-existent.
So yeah.
Don't think that's normal.
Which has been really nice, though.
mean, it really has.
Yeah, I've enjoyed
it. It's a relief.
It makes our jobs a lot less stressful, shall we say.
Yeah, well, that was fun.
Wasn't yeah, exactly. So both Walmart and Target reported earnings this week, and they looked good, which is excellent because the retail sector had pretty much been dead and buried for the last few months. And
the aggregate number was good, too.
Yeah, so the retail sales report was also released this week, and it doubled the estimate. It was estimated to grow 0.3%. It grew 0.6. So, and the previous month was revised up. So actually, things are looking much better than they were a month ago in retail.
As goes the consumer, so goes the economy.
Yep. And for the season overall, earnings had a beat rate of only 59.3, pretty disappointing based on recent quarters. But the more important revenue beat rate was at 60.7. That's lower than the first quarter of this year, but higher than the previous about 10 quarters. So
yeah, and to get two in a row is a very good sign.
Definitely. And then the most important thing that came out of earnings season was actually the forward guidance. It was pretty much overwhelmingly positive, which we haven't seen since 2011. So that, I think that's the best thing that we saw over the last quarter was the positivity coming out of Main Street,
which is reflected in the consumer sentiment, small
sure.
business sentiment, and so on.
The economic data actually looked pretty good this week, which is, I haven't said that in a while. It's been,
no, you haven't.
It's been a lot of misses lately, but this week there were a lot of beats. I mentioned the retail sales. Initial jobless claims continued the trend and came in at 232,000, which
seasonally adjusted.
Right, but that's fantastic. I mean, that is one of the lowest numbers we've seen.
Second lowest since 70s or something like that.
Yeah, pretty solid. And the population's so much bigger, so it means mm-hmm. more today than it did back then. And then on the downside, though, several housing indicators released that missed. So I think it was a home builder, or no, it was the permits and starts, and then home builder sentiment was better than expected.
Yeah.
So kind of a mixed housing data, but I'm still pretty.
That's what happens when you measure things from point to point over a month.
Right. It's kind of meaningless. You have to look at the trend.
Look
and
at
the trend's real positive.
The averages, something like that, and it'll be a lot better.
Exactly.
I got a little bit more to say about things like the job situation out there, and we'll do that right after the break. But I did want to point out that the non-adjusted, in other words, the actual first-time layoffs, the number was 211,700. Do you know when the last time was that the number was that low?
I do not.
That's because in the recorded history of statistics in the USA, there has never been a month that low.
Wow.
And think about that. We've got the highest population we've ever had and the lowest layoffs we've ever had. Something's going on out there. And we'll talk about that a little bit more right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 222-8255. Give us a call. I promise you it will be free. All right, trivia question about the market. The volatility in the market is always there to a degree, and as we mentioned, it's been a little bit more lately. But there's also psychological aspects to the market. For instance, the even numbers, which are just numbers. All an index is a bunch of prices thrown together and turned into a number. It means absolutely nothing. But psychologically to investors, it means quite a bit. So when the market first broke 1,000, it was in about 1966, and it didn't stay above 1,000 until the early 80s. And at every whatever 1,000 level after that, there seems to be some resistance to it, so it'll push over and come back. We first hit 22,000 on the Dow this very month, August 2nd it was, mm-hmm. when that happened. And like it always does, it has pulled back and then gotten over it again. Well, it pulled back again this week. So we've had two retrenchments back from 22,000. I want to know how many there were total at 21,000. How many times did it lose the 21,000 mark only to go back over it?
I think so. I know.
It's a whole number. And that's all I'm going to tell you. So one thing I wanted to mention on the jobs thing, I heard an interesting analysis the other day. One of the problems out there is a lack of reported inflation. Why do I say that's a problem? Well, in order to get better interest rates, meaning higher, which Adam and I have long argued is a necessity, labor has to get a bigger share of the pie. And it's not just because we want the interest rates up. Think about it. People working should make more and more money in response to actual inflation to a degree and reported inflation to a degree. And you know, because it's been widely reported, that wages have been pretty much stagnant for about 15 years.
Talked about it last week.
Well, in actuality, wages are not really that stagnant. There's a couple of things happening that play out in the development of the number, and one of them is retirements being replaced by millennials. A millennial takes the job of someone who retired, and the millennial gets paid less because they don't have the experience. The key is the millennial getting a job this year gets paid a lot more than the millennial of 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. The wages in first-time college graduates are up substantially.
They've never been better. So you're not really seeing that because the net effect of that job replacement was actually a reduction in how much money people earned. But the wage rate has actually gone up.
Yeah, and that is interesting because of the way the demographics look in this country. There's this huge group of retirees, the baby boomers, mm-hmm. and they're leaving the workforce at 10 to 12,000 a day. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the millennials, which is another huge group that is taking jobs. So, yeah, for every $250,000 a year job, you're replacing it with a $50,000 a year job. And that's happening at huge numbers of times per day.
So if you're showing up at the same job you've been doing for years every day and you keep hearing on the news that wages aren't rising, you have absolutely no incentive to change jobs. The truth of the matter is, if you change jobs, you're going to make a lot more money. So if you want to get some inflation going and you want to get some more money in your pocket, do us a favor. Quit.
Yeah,
get a new job. As Adam was saying, you can play it on the defensive side of that a little bit. You go out and find a job first, put that offer in your pocket, then go hit your boss for a big raise. And if you don't get it, so what?
Yeah, go to the other job.
Yeah.
The worst they can say is no, and then you already have another job lined up where you're making more money.
You'll be helping society at many levels. You'll be making more money and spending more money.
And paying more money into that Social Security program, which I really need you to do.
Exactly. Because he's giving his to me.
Exactly.
Thank you. I gave mine to my parents, and that was all fine. This is the way the whole thing is set up to work.
Yep.
But if you go out there, and if you make more money, and then you tell all your friends that you're making more money, and that jobs are easy to get, because right now, it's the hardest time in the history of this country to fill a job. There are so few people out there between the 93 million that are still out of the workforce and people who are still afraid because of the Great Recession. They're afraid that if they were to leave their job, they won't get a new one, that you don't really keep up with what's actually happening in the job market if you're just going back and forth to work every day. But trust me, things are good out there. I think a lot of negativity about a lot of things is going on right now because the media is in what I called the other day the industry called negativity. They don't want you to hear anything good.
The fear industry.
Yes. But as Adam pointed out, economic numbers are good. The jobs numbers are good. Things are so much different than they were even a year ago today, strangely enough. Things are a lot different. And you see it in the levels of the Dow, and you see it in the levels of small business optimism. Consumer spending, 70% of our economy is consumer-driven, and spending is rising quickly. That means people are going to start hiring. One of the reasons there isn't a little bit more going on in things like the construction industry is that capacity utilization is under 76% so far.
Actually, anecdotally, I was having dinner with a friend of mine who works in the construction industry last night, and they are flat out. They have no more capacity. They can't keep up.
Huh.
Yeah. He said it's as good as it's ever been.
Huh. Well, see, it's all changing.
Yeah.
Demand stimulates all kinds of things.
Oh, and they're hiring, and they can't find enough people.
So. Yeah, there's the point. Now, all of you people who got discouraged, you know who you are, and I know who a lot of you are, because some of them became clients as they were forced out. If you are thinking about going back, and if you have some skills left over, you might want to take a look around a little bit. If you know how to pound nails, mix mortar, and lay concrete and all those things, if you're a plumber, carpenter, anybody with a good set of skills and the willingness to show up on time, the number one problem many employers have is people are late. In fact, I was having dinner with a friend last night, too, and I think it was last time I saw him. He said there were a lot of people who didn't understand that thing about showing up on time. They didn't misunderstand that for very long, or they misunderstood it somewhere else.
Yep.
Those little things, people who employ people care a lot about that. You know, if you're a builder and you make a promise on a job site to somebody and all of a sudden your people don't show up or show up late and you don't get it done, there's going to be some mighty unhappy customers out there.
I just remembered I have another friend in the construction industry, and he recently thought about leaving his job for more money. So he went out, and within a couple of weeks, he had another job offer for 10 grand more than he was making. So he took it to his employer, and they matched it, and he stayed. So it can happen.
But they're not going to come to you yet because
no.
This situation is still kind of quiet out there.
Right.
But it's happening, people. Take the offense. You can only win. And you'd be doing me a favor.
Yep. And I talked about this last week on the radio, and then turned it into a blog this week on our website. So if you go and check that out at VanWeFinancial.com and want to read about it, there's some good statistics in there that point to the JOLTS survey, which is the job opening and labor turnover survey that the government puts out. And it was a really fantastic report this month. And I expect that to continue, but we'll see.
Now, if that wasn't a segue into who we are,
I thought
I've
it was
never
pretty
heard
good.
What.
Yeah.
Carry on.
All right. So, yeah, on our website, you can do a variety of things. We have our blog, which I mentioned. You can also book a meeting with us. It's a button on the top of the page. Click it, and you can look at our calendars and set something up. Our initial consultation, always free, no cost to you. If we want to do business together, that's great. If not, we think you'll leave knowing more than you came in knowing. So always a good thing to do. We are financial planners. Our office is located in Jacksonville Beach. We're right off of Butler, though, so it's easy to get to from all points in the city. If you aren't an internet person, you can always call us as well at 685-1505, and that's area code 904. Or you can send us an email, info@vanweefinancial.com. And we're on Facebook, Twitter, and pretty much anywhere else you want to find us.
And yes, we do manage money for people, but it's so much more. Certified financial planners have the guaranteed to have the knowledge, or you don't get your CFP, to do a lot of other things. We did some interesting tax planning over the last couple of weeks for people. And boy, if you want to talk about how badly this country needs something like tax reform and tax reduction, we got smacked in the face with that one yesterday with a young, ambitious couple, and they're just getting robbed.
Yeah,
it
no
is
kidding.
Unbelievable how much people pay and how little they get because they went over a certain income threshold. Things like the child tax credit
goes away.
You're paying $11,000 out of your pocket per child for child care. And you get nothing because you make enough money to actually pay that $11,000.
Exactly.
They take away all the benefits for you. The system is stark raving nuts, and it needs the biggest overhaul ever. I have absolutely little to no belief that Mitch McConnell can get this done.
Yeah, and $11,000 a year after tax money for child care is actually a good deal. That's what's scary.
That is scary.
I know people that are paying twice that.
Well, geez. I think we will wind up with some tax reductions. I doubt if they'll be anywhere near as good as they should be. Part of me doubts that they'll even be good for this year. It might wait so long that they do it next year. This economy, if it's going to carry on what it's doing right now in any significant way, requires that instead of talk, we get people like McCain off his rear end, get them in there, and actually fight for the American people so that people like our friends stop getting their faces ripped off. This is absolutely ridiculous. And yes, that was an editorial comment, I guess. After the break, I'll talk to you about the gold IRAs. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
I tried to find out once how much money Pink Floyd made on that song, Money. All they said was, we lost count. What can you say?
They welcome did quite back. Well.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And before we dig into this gold in the IRA thing, I didn't get around to something last week that I want Adam to talk about now. He got an interesting phone call that if you don't stop and think about this when you hear the story, then you've never stopped to think about much of anything financially. This is just such a wonderful dilemma, I guess is the word I would use. It involves family. It involves gambling, It's just a great story.
It's completely a gamble, and it is an interesting story. So I got a call, and it was one of my clients, and she was talking about her mother and said that she had a insurance policy, a life insurance policy, and it was the death benefit was $55,000, and she was paying $7,000 a year for it. And she wanted me to take a look at it and see if it's something that she should continue or discontinue. So she brought over a copy of the policy and looked it over, and sure enough, it was the cost of insurance was about $7,000 a year, and the cash value of the policy, this is a whole life policy, and the cash value of the policy was about $600. So if she were to turn it in, that's what she would get, $600. The reason that it was like that is at one point the cash value had been up around $11,000 or $12,000. She had all the paperwork from going back for years. And then the policy, her mother had allowed the cash value to pay for the cost of insurance for a while. So it ran down the cash value. And so what she was left with was basically $7,000 a year, betting that her mother would pass away in before that $7,000 got up to pay $55,000. So her mom's 92 and in okay health. So what would you do? Would you take that bet?
And as my research department brought up, would it be a different answer if you weren't related to the person?
I think you have to take that out of it, though. You have to take your emotion out of it. Is it
possible?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a financial bet.
That it is.
Is.
But I don't like to get involved in situations where I feel like I'm betting against my own relative.
Well, I mean, you're not. I mean, I guess technically that's true, but in reality, you're just looking at the numbers.
So I checked the life expectancy table for a 92-year-old.
Okay.
And, you know, every year you get older, your life expectancy does something very strange. It doesn't go down exactly by one, because there are hurdles in life where you've weeded out all the, you've Darwined the population down.
The genetic things that could happen when you're young, and yeah.
So if you're still kicking and you're 92, you got a pretty good chance of going about another 6 years, 7 years, somewhere right in there.
Mm.
Now, what do you do? 55,000, 7,000. Every time you pay one, you throw that money away.
Yep.
If she outlives the 55,000.
And the really unfortunate thing is that the paid in amount on this policy was about 54,000. So she's already put $54,000 into this policy that's only ever going to pay 55,000.
Sunk cost.
It is. You can't look at that, though.
One observation. Why do people buy whole life?
I don't know.
No, that's another whole story.
It is. But yeah.
I took this to a committee at home. It was comprised of my wife, your mother, and my research department. And the three of them got together. They're actually one person, but
okay.
We're trying to look at it from all sides of the thing. And we concluded one thing for sure. And that was, this is a difficult decision.
It really is. And
but she, I don't remember, it must have been the research department part of her that came up with this. And what about selling the policy?
Right, and I did bring that up to the client yesterday, and they're going, well, first they're going to make a decision, keep or get rid of.
Okay.
If they choose to get rid of it, they are going to weigh out, they're going to shop it. If they can get any money for the policy, that's what they'll do.
Okay.
But if,
but if they're going to keep it, they're just doing
they're
the
just
pure
gonna,
bet.
Right.
Well, and I should probably bring up, too, that they can afford the premium.
Yes.
It's not a hardship for them. They can live without the money.
Yes.
Both the premium money, and they could live without the $55,000. On the other hand, there's so much time and money invested in it, it would be nice to get it.
True.
But back to my whole life comment. So you pay a bunch of premiums to this company for decades.
Yeah, this was a...
And then they give you your money back.
And in this case, if her mother lasts through this year, they will have paid more than the value of the policy. So
now I think that's
it's crazy.
Wrong.
It's crazy.
The second, if you do have a whole life policy, and if you do, please call us. But if you have one of these and you've finally paid in so much money that now you're paying more than it was ever worth, well, it means, A, you're old.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. In that respect. Two, your need for insurance has probably been outlived by now.
Yeah. And the reason she bought this policy was it was for a good purpose.
Yes, it was.
She had a sibling, and the mother had loaned money to the sibling, mm-hmm. and she wanted to make things even with the other child. So she bought a life insurance policy to pay out that amount to the other child should she pass.
Yeah, that's one of the great uses for life insurance. If you're doing some estate planning and you're going to wind up losing some to taxes, you can always donate some money to an irrevocable life insurance trust, put a policy in there. So you pay the estate taxes out of the estate, and then the policy pays tax-free to the beneficiaries, and they've replaced all that potential income. There are wonderful things about life insurance that no other vehicle will do. This is not one of them. But it did serve that purpose to equalize things at the time it was taken out. But that's a completely different argument than what do you do now? The coin toss every year?
Yeah, I don't know.
As I pointed out, nobody's as lucky as Hillary where you win six tosses in a row. And for those of you non-political junkies, that was the Iowa primary.
And to me, one of the factors is it's only $55,000.
Exactly.
It's not $1 million policy.
And it's only $7,000 out of pocket.
Yeah, but that's... To me, that $7,000 has more cost than the potential benefit of the $55,000.
Yeah. Well, okay. Did I not say that this would be a dilemma?
Yeah, it is. And I don't think a decision's been made on this one. So
yeah, but we'll see. I absolutely love hearing things like this that we've never really considered before. So you get to think about it from the aspect of the insured and the people inheriting and the financial advisor is supposed to have an answer for these things. And my answer is,
Well, I mean, we did what we're supposed to do. We gave her options.
Exactly.
And
but I
she'll
did
make
think,
a decision.
And I did appreciate getting the feedback that, well, what about selling it? You might make some amount of money that's in between the $655,000, and it takes all that interpersonal family stuff away, and it's no longer a gamble. It's a check.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was quite good. But anyway, that's the kind of thing that if you have a job like ours, you get to do once in a while. It makes life very interesting. Well, we've gone from that method of gambling. Let's talk briefly about another method of gambling. Any of you horse race fans out there remember the name Seattle Slough? Remember that?
No.
Apparently you have to be older than Adam, but back in our day, Seattle Slough was a great racehorse. Well, I got a little story now I call Seattle Skew, S-K-E-W. It seems this month that there's been a little look back in the city of Seattle, which raised its minimum wage to $15. And the powers that be out there, starting with the mayor, along with a bunch of the mayor's liberal cronies, decided that they were going to push for this $15 deal. The mayor's name is Ed Murray, Democrat, of course, Seattle. He reached out to the university economics department at Berkeley and asked for it to do a study that would tell you what's going to happen with the $15 an hour minimum wage. So they came back in June, and it seems that the mayor didn't like the results very much because it showed that low-skilled workers were being punished to the tune of $179 a month, and it hurt the unemployment numbers. So he also had the people at the university remove all mentions of the study so as to distribute it without any negative results being shown. So they implement it, and what happens? The study proves to be accurate, and who gets hurt? The minimum wage people who lost their jobs and have less income. So I have dubbed this whole stupid process the Seattle Skew. Nice job. We'll see you right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 222-TALK, 222-8255. I see something ringing right now, actually. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question sponsored by First Coast Alarm. We have retreated from the 22,000 Dow two times now, and I want to know how many times we retreated from the 21,000 Dow before it finally took off. And I'm not saying it can never get back there, because it could. But right now, we're well above 21,000. Good morning, George.
How are you doing this morning?
Wonderfully. How about you?
I've got actually, you were talking about tax reform a short time ago, and I've got a tax question for you.
All right. We are not tax preparers, but we know a lot about it, and we'll give you an answer or tell you who can.
Okay. I've got some stock in a particular company.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to sell that stock and reinvest in a different program, maybe mutual funds or something like that.
Okay.
Will I incur a large tax bill if I do that?
That depends. How long have you held it?
Not too long, probably a year, year and a half at the most.
Okay, that 1 year is critical because it takes 1 year to be subject to long-term capital gains rate.
Is this held in a... brokerage account or in a retirement account?
Well, actually, it's held by the company that sold it.
Oh, okay. So it's probably
and,
not.
And okay. one other thing. Let me. This I'm sure has a bearing on it. Mm-hmm. The account is in my name and my son's name.
Hmm. Okay.
Not going to change the taxes. Now, how a CPA would want to do that, I'm going to leave that up to the CPA. But
okay.
there will be a taxable event if you make a profit on it. What is your taxable income level? Is it above? First off, are you married?
I am married, and my taxable income is probably in the 50,000 plus range, 50, maybe 55.
Okay, so you're actually in the 15%, which means
right.
you might not have a taxable event, right?
Now, in theory, and I want you to, do you do your own taxes or do you have a preparer?
I have someone do my taxes.
I would like you to check with them that this statement is either true or false because I believe it's true. How much is what is the value of that stock?
Probably $150,000.
Oh, okay. Well, that changes everything. Yes, you will incur a 15% gain. What's your cost basis? Do you know that?
I do not know that, but let me tell you this. The reason I want to sell is because since I bought it a year or a year and a half ago, it's been steadily going down in price.
Oh, okay. You bought it outright. All right. I'm going to say you've paid more for it than it's worth today?
Yes, I do believe that would be the case.
Sell it and don't worry about it. You might even get a $3,000 tax break
mm-hmm.
deduction.
Okay,
there is nothing to worry about. If you have a basis higher than what you sell it for, just get rid of it as fast as you can.
And in fact,
sell it and don't worry about the tax.
Don't worry about a thing.
If you have more than $3,000 worth of capital losses on that, you mm-hmm. can deduct that over several years, $3,000 a year
yep.
as a tax deduction. So it will actually work in your favor, even though you lost money on your investment. It'll work in your favor at tax time.
Okay, and once again, the fact that my son and I are on it's a joint account.
You might spread the loss with him, but there again, I'd like to defer that to your tax preparer.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not a problem.
Very helpful, and thank you, and enjoy your show tremendously.
Well, thank you very much, and we love delivering good news.
Yeah, no kidding.
Take care.
Well, I love getting good news as well.
Oh, by the way, would you like to take a shot at the trivia question? How many times did the market pull back?
Wasn't listening, and
okay.
I'll pass on that.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's nice. You know, the bad part is you're losing money.
Right.
Good news is...
But that's already happened. So
yes, and you're not going to pay taxes. You're going to actually reap some back on your taxes.
Exactly. And the... So if he had a taxable income, if you're married, less than $75,300, mm-hmm. your capital gains rate is actually 0%.
Including the gain made on the sale. If the gain on the sale takes you above that amount, then
correct.
It becomes taxable.
Correct.
See, it's tax planning means doing something before you do something. It means planning out how much or what, and then figuring out before that what happens if you actually pull the trigger on the transaction. And we do a lot of the tax planning. That's one of the things that CFPs are good at. But we do not do taxes, obviously.
I wonder how that works, though, with it being a joint account, then.
I'm not sure, frankly. And
I will either.
I'm going to find that out independently through my CPA.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder if they assign 50%.
My intuition would be exactly that.
Yeah, that's what I would guess.
But I will
as
find
well.
Out, because nobody's asked me that before.
No, me neither.
And I'm too cheap to let anybody else be on my account, so it never came up. You know, it's Sarah and I, and you find a joint return, so you never worry about the fact that two people on it. It's just one tax return.
Right.
All right. How many of you have actually heard of an individual 401k? The two of us have, because we have them. This is what happens if you run a very small business where it's just you with the possibility of also having your spouse involved in it.
And if you do this and you have a profitable business,
this is the best option.
It's such a great plan for you.
Yes. So, and I've had one for many years now, and I have the distinction of being the only person I've ever heard of that had their plan audited.
Yes, you did.
And I looked it up in the IRS code, and sure enough, there is a process for auditing personal 401k plans.
Mm-hmm.
And that process involves getting a home visit from your local IRS agent. So along with my CPA, we met in my house, my home office, with a tax person, an IRS person, a couple years ago. And it turned out she was very nice. Some mother, loved dogs, and really wasn't there to do anything but audit what was going on. And after a while, when you get talking a little bit, you find out the real truth. The real truth is the reason they audit 401k plans is for abuse. And by abuse, I mean buying things in your 401k that you can't buy in a 401k and using them personally. So they want to look around a little bit at what they see in your home office. And if there's a Monet in there and you list an asset of a painting in your 401k and it's in your house, guess what? Taxable right now. So the whole concept of what is allowed to be bought in a retirement plan and what is allowed to be in your home or in your hand is what brings me to the ultimate gold IRA. You hear this from, oh gosh, I could probably reel off a half a dozen companies now. This is the big thing. Keep your gold at home, put it in your hand, and you own it, and it's in your IRA. Okay, well, when you go to school to become a CFP, one of the first things you realize is that the concept of self-dealing. And that means that you have a retirement plan that has assets in it, and you have you. And those are two separate entities. The IRA can own some things. It can't own other things. Different types of IRAs can own different things. But let's say that the most often asked question here is, should I buy real estate in the IRA? And our first response is, do you ever plan to use it, live in it, or anything like that? Because if you do, that is a prohibition against self-dealing, and it makes the whole thing taxable right now. If you own certain types of things in your IRA, it is, well, not allowed. Plain and simple. You can't buy certain collectibles. You can't buy, for instance, antiques, gems, stamps, coins, alcoholic beverages. Those are the kind of things that will get you involved with self-dealing, because you're going to use them even if it's only to look at and get enjoyment from. Well, one of the things that we've always been told is that gold and silver fall into this. And I don't have time to get into it deeply today, but I want everybody in the next week to listen to these commercials. You are going to see one. I promise you, you'll see one if you watch any television at all, about holding the gold in your hand in your IRA. And next week, I'm going to exhaust every word I can find about that from the websites of these people and from the IRS. And there is a noticeable lack of overlap in those two things. In other words, I have no ability, as of today at least, to tell you, here's the provision in the tax code that says this is okay. Until I can do that, I'm going to tell you right now, if you do it, you're going to subject yourself to a really bad fine, penalty, and tax bill. Don't do it, but do be here next week for sure. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.